This is the Financial Exchange with Chuck Zotta and Mike Armstrong. Your exclusive look at business and financial news affecting your day, your city, your world. Stay informed and up to date about economic and market trends. Plus, get breaking business news every day. The Financial Exchange proudly supports the Disabled American Veterans Department of Massachusetts. Registration is now open for this year's DAV 5K on Saturday, November 6th. Go to financialexchangeshow.com/DAV for details. And now, it's time for the Financial Exchange with Chuck Zotta and Mike Armstrong.
11 o'clock here on the Financial Exchange, and we are in the midst of a... I will now upgrade this from slight upward pressure to a small rally.
Okay.
That's where I think we're at right now. We've got the Dow up 45 points, the S&P's up 11, the NASDAQ up 69. Russell 2000, though, is seeing a little bit of a bump here, up almost 0.75% to 2309 right now, so a little bit of a small cap lead here going on. We'll see how that continues. Russell's bounced around this level a couple times this year and hasn't really found traction, so we'll see if this is finally the time that it pushes through a little bit. 10-year Treasury, what's going on there? Down to 1.62%, so a little bit of money flowing in that direction. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, up another 1% today to $84.63. We've got gold up $12 an ounce to $18.08, so back above the $1,800 mark for the first time in a little while. And crypto is crypto. Mike, let's talk a little bit about unrealized capital gains. First, why don't we define what an unrealized capital gain is for those listening?
Sure. It's an investment that you have made that has earned money on paper, but you have not yet sold said investment. Let's say you bought Facebook's stock on January 1st of this year. You would have an unrealized gain of approximately 20% on that stock. And if you hadn't sold it yet, you wouldn't have been taxed on it yet. And in the case of Facebook, I don't believe they pay a dividend. So you would literally have no taxes due on this investment gain that you have made in this case.
So the reason that we bring this up is because there's been an awful lot of ideas floated about different wealth taxes and this and that over the last 5 years. And a proposal that seems to be gaining some traction. I'm skeptical it ever makes it into a final bill here. But there's a proposal that has been originated with the Senate Finance Committee Chair, Ron Wyden from Oregon, who is proposing to impose an annual tax on unrealized capital gains for billionaires. Basically, it would apply to anyone with either $1 billion in assets or over $100 million in income for 3 consecutive years.
Yeah. So effectively, in this country, about 1,000 taxpayers.
Not many.
No.
So, few different questions that I have just before I even give my opinion on this. First one. So this is a tax on unrealized capital gains.
Yep.
What if I have an unrealized capital loss? Can I use that to offset an unrealized capital gain? Or is this just going to be... we're only taxing gains?
Excellent question.
We don't have any detail on that.
No.
But in theory, if I had a really bad year in the market like 2008, I really should be able to book those unrealized capital losses then, because that's how we do it with realized capital gains and losses, is your losses offset your gains.
Yeah.
So first, are we going to play fair on that type of thing? Second, yes, this is only 1,000 people, but the types of assets that billionaires own... they don't typically go out and buy the S&P 500
ETF.
Okay? Yeah. So it's not something where you just call up their broker and say, hey, can you send me the cost basis information for the year? They own all kinds of weird crap, often in all kinds of LLCs and shell companies and this and that.
And specifically, this tax would only be on unrealized liquid capital gains. And so that is a further complication.
Now you're just going to make me push everything into real estate then.
Yeah, so that would be a complication here is, let's say this tax actually gets enacted. One, I mean, when the wealth tax had initially been proposed or at least made popular by Elizabeth Warren when she was running for president, that was one of the big complaints. It's like, okay, well, how are you going to measure the wealth of all of these people when their wealth is tied up in things like real estate and art and wine collections and all these things that are relatively immeasurable? What sort of scrutiny are you going to put on this, and how do you measure it all? By targeting just the liquid capital gains that are unrealized, I suppose you are narrowing that down a little bit, but you are potentially pushing people into different types of investments.
And this is where I get to kind of where I stand on this, is that this is a solution in search of a problem.
Yeah.
In that, I've said this before, back when last year during the pandemic, at the beginning, I said, if you want to get money out to people, the easiest way to do that is to simply get money out to people, which is what we ended up doing. We sent a bunch of checks out and this and that and unemployment. If you want to tax people with high incomes and lots of assets, then just do that. Don't go, we're going to do it. This is the most complicated way to possibly do this. There are really easy ways that you could actually do this if you wanted to that don't involve creating an entirely new part of the tax code to target 1,000 freaking people.
Yeah, it is unnecessarily complicated. So here's one of these hazards that you have with this hypothetical tax here. So two people. One of them is a tech startup CEO that founded Moderna. And under this scenario, is a billionaire, would be my guess, and has all of his wealth tied up in unrealized Moderna stock. That person would face a pretty massive tax bill under this scenario. Let's take the other person whose billionaire parents just passed away and left him a massive amount of wealth, but received the step up in cost basis. They could have the exact same net worth and face completely different tax bills. Is that our intention with this? It's not. The intention was to tax the wealthy, but you have completely different results depending on how that wealth was made.
It's just a mess. And there's a really easy way. And again, this is my personal view, okay? It's not my... I didn't originate this, so if you want to... I'm not going to take credit for it, but here's how we should deal with this. The tax rates for income and capital gains should be the same. So you actually simplify the tax code. You don't complicate it. You make it the same. Whether you earn your money with your hands or with your, brokerage account, you get taxed the exact same way. Every person in the country gets a $1 million lifetime exemption on capital gains because we want more millionaires. So the first $1 million that you make via capital gains, you don't pay taxes on.
Yep.
Great. Why does that make sense? Oh, here's a reason why. Because each year right now, we give a $12,000 income tax deduction, the standard deduction, which if you go over the course of someone's lifetime right now, 80 years, that's about $1 million that we give on the income side of things. So we give $1 million lifetime capital gains exemption. So your first $1 million that you make via your business, it's tax-free. Because I want people to be a millionaire. But once you are, you could tax the same way as everyone else. And that's how you deal with this. You don't say, well, we're going to have a billionaire's tax that applies to liquid assets, but we don't know how to value artwork, so we're not going to do it on that. No, it
doesn't
scrap
work.
That. Yeah, that is crap.
I mean, there are a number of reasons that this tax, I think, well, either it's dead in the water or it gets enacted and it's really easy to evade would be my guess. Like, there's one of two solutions there.
Do you know how much a Picasso is going to be worth after this? I'm going to have even less of a chance of buying a Picasso in my lifetime.
So I don't know. I'm tempted to say that this doesn't go anywhere because generally speaking, when you talk about raising taxes, it's a difficult enough scenario. When you talk about creating entirely new taxes, it's almost a non-starter. But we got here because Democrats... where some of the Democrats are completely unwilling to raise taxes on, even a few thousand people, and others want to raise taxes across the board. And so the pool of people that they want to pay the taxes has just gotten narrower and narrower and narrower. That all having been said, it does seem to me like we are getting closer to some sort of conclusion here, mainly just because you haven't had as many public comments from every lawmaker out there about this tax proposal over the last 2 weeks. And I take that as a sign that we're getting closer to the nitty-gritty details on this stuff. But this isn't a nitty-gritty
detail. This is just weird.
I know. It's strange.
Again, if you want to just do a wealth tax, just do a wealth. This is just weird. It just doesn't make sense.
To me, it's an admittance that they want to go after the wealth tax, but they have no practical means of doing so, and this is some sort of quasi-wealth tax. So there you go.
There's that. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have trivia, and then we're going to be talking about the state of paid family leave in the United States.
This is your home for the latest business and financial news in New England and around the country. This is the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
The mission of the March of Dimes is more important than ever. New data shows that pregnant women with COVID-19 are 15 times more likely to die and 22 times more likely to have a preterm birth. Many of those impacted are moms and babies of color. I'm Candy O'Terry, the MC for the 2021 Black Ties for Babies Gala at the Omni Seaport Hotel Boston, November 6th. Join us to fight for the health of moms and babies. Go to marchofdimes.org/events/Black Ties for Babies.
If you're nearing retirement age, it's incredibly important to know how required minimum distributions work. The penalties associated with withdrawing the wrong amount are hefty. Call the Armstrong Advisory Group and ask for their new free guide, Understanding RMDs. Call 800-393-4001 and get your copy today. That's 800-393-4001. Or download it right now at armstrongadvisory.com. Securities offered through Securities America Incorporated. Member FINRA SIPC. And advisory services offered through Securities America Advisors Incorporated. Michael Armstrong, representative. Armstrong Advisory Group and the Securities America companies are unaffiliated. Representatives of Security America do not offer tax or legal advice. Join our text club by texting the word Barry to 63566. Send your first and last name and get involved today. You're listening to the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
This year's DAV 5K is right around the corner. In fact, it's happening in less than 2 weeks, and there are still bibs available. I got mine on Friday. Did the two of you receive yours?
Yeah.
Join us here at the Financial Exchange as we once again support the Disabled American Veterans Department of Massachusetts in this year's DAV 5K, presented by Encore Boston Harbor. The race is Saturday, November 6th from Fort Independence at Castle Island. Visit financialexchangeshow.com/DAV to sign up, and let's finish in the fort. By the way, I had a great training run yesterday that I just want to share some details.
Do you?
With all, I do.
Okay.
I do. I did a nice little 5 mile training run. Finished in 36:54, which for those of you at home, average pace is 7:19. That despite there being 327 feet of elevation that I ran up during the time. And my last mile was actually in a pace of 6:32. So
I don't know what pace Chuck is going to run at in 2 weeks, but I will hereby pledge $100 to the DAV for anybody that beats Chuck's time.
Ooh.
But you've got to race in order to...
You got to race and register.
You got to register and actually race.
It.
Again, yeah.
Can I use my car?
No. No, and you can't do a relay either, so it can't be you do the first quarter mile and then hand it off
you
to someone else.
But if you choose to hit Chuck with your car prior to the race, that would actually save me some money.
I'm telling you, I am coming in hot. I felt as good yesterday as I have in years. But again, if you want to register, go to financialexchangeshow.com/DAV.
Or if you could just get Chuck like horribly drunk for me the night before the race, that would do
no,
me
I do
favors.
Better then. I do better.
This isn't water.
I do better. In any case, I'm feeling great, and I am I'm all kinds of excited for it. You know what else I'm excited for is a little bit of trivia. And trivia today is brought to you by Southern Airways Express. You can enjoy fall on Nantucket with Southern Airways Express. You can book your flight today for either a day trip, maybe a long weekend. They've got easy travel from Norwood, Providence, and New Bedford. Forget the ferry. Forget Logan's hassles, the high fares, all that. The easiest way to Nantucket, it's on Southern Airways Express. Great service, low fares. Book today at iFlySouthern.com. Let's see what Matt drafted up today. Just going into the trivia file here. Here we go. This week in 1971, baseball legend and World Series champion Pedro Martinez was born in the Dominican Republic. So we're going to be asking a Pedro trivia question. Fantastic. Let's see. Tucker, we're going to change the question.
Oh, you got to give me notice. I need notice. What? Hold on.
I just told you.
Yeah, I know.
I just told you we're changing the question.
All right. Well, I don't have my element ready. So, hold on a second.
Whoa. Looks like Chuck has changed his mind about our trivia question yet again.
Pivot!
This is a trivia pivot alert.
Pivot!
All right, we are going to do a new trivia question based on Pedro Martinez instead here. You guys ready?
Yeah.
We'll take the second person with the right answer for this one because it's not an easy one, and I don't want people Googling it. So if you know the right answer, text it to 63566. Please include your first and last name and the keyword I fly. On September 10th, 1999, Pedro Martinez pitched probably the best game of his career in Yankee Stadium. Went 9 full innings, struck out 17, and gave up one hit, which was a home run, okay, in the second inning. Who hit the home run off Pedro Martinez in that September 10th, 1999 game? Text us at 63566. I want the second person with the right answer to be the winner here. Again, on the September 10th, 1999 game, where Pedro Martinez struck out 17 in Yankee Stadium and only gave up one hit, who had that hit, which was a home run in the second inning? Text us at 63566. Still the best game I've ever seen pitched. It was quite literally one pitch away from a perfect game, but that home run in the second did him in. So there you go. The world has found a way to do this. The U.S. lags on paid leave. U.S. is one of 6 countries which has no national paid leave.
And hold on. That's not just developed countries.
No, 6.
That's really, really bad.
There are 185 countries that offer paid leave for new mothers, and only one, which is Eswatini, formerly Swaziland, has fewer than 4 weeks. Of the 174 countries that offer paid leave for personal health problems, just 26 offer 4 weeks or fewer. So pretty much every country in the world aside from the U.S. has some type of national paid leave that lasts 4 weeks or more.
Yeah. I don't even really know what to say here.
It's not even that expensive to do.
It's pretty embarrassing.
It's not even that expensive to do. We implemented it. When was it that the Massachusetts implementation went in?
2 or 3 years ago.
3 years ago?
Yeah.
It costs a couple dollars a pay period.
Yeah.
And everyone in Massachusetts now has paid family leave.
12 weeks, yeah.
12 weeks. And it doesn't cost that much. So this is something that's really simple and really easy.
And as we go out there and, I mean, one, I know that a lot of businesses are now implementing this across the board because they can't attract employees.
Yeah.
But as you go out there and complain about not being able to find employees, go look at your own policies in terms of what you offer that's out there. I mean, my wife works for a big company. They've been, you know, bumping up their policies for years now. I think now even the non-primary caregiver paternity leave is like 12 weeks paid in a lot of cases. And I think there's a middle ground here on the federal level that you can come to pretty easily. It's not all that expensive. But as we talk about, this is just one of the many issues that is, you know, very clearly leading to people either exiting the workforce or not having kids. It's definitely contributing to both.
There are, do you know any of the 6 countries that currently do not have paid family leave?
North Korea. We always fall into categories with them every once in a while.
Actually, they do.
No, I do not.
It's the United States.
Yeah.
Suriname.
Suriname, yeah. Classic.
Do you know how many people live in Suriname?
No.
586,000.
Got it.
Papua New Guinea. Population 8.9 million. And then there are a few island nations in the Pacific Ocean that have a total population of less than 500,000. Those are the only countries in the world that don't have a national paid family leave program. Those are the only ones.
Yeah.
North Korea has paid family leave and the United States does not. What are we talking about here?
Yeah, I mean, there are
now. I don't know the details of the North Korean paid family leave program. So,
Kim Jong Un takes care of your kids.
I don't know if I want to even Google that.
Oh, here we go. North Korean women can get 240 days of maternity leave.
Wow,
you get paid a sack of rice.
There you go.
And
they raised it in 2015. Now, again, who knows what if you actually get that? But it's on the books. They say you get 240 days in North Korea.
So.
We're not talking about that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess where I land on this is like I know there are a lot of things that are out there in public policy that is stupid, but anything that we can do in this country to attempt to make it more feasible for parents to have kids, more economically feasible for them to do that, is going to be good for our economy. If you want to look at it from the pure, forget about all the right and wrong stuff and the like, you know, basics that I think should be out there. But if you want to look at it from a purely economic perspective, we have a number of policies in this country that make it difficult for families to grow their families. And that's going to lead to problems like they're experiencing in Italy, across Europe, Japan, and many other places. And so if we don't fix that, it is going to get worse.
Globally, the average paid maternity leave is 29 weeks. So again, we're not talking about going to half a year. We're talking 12 weeks. It's 3 months.
Yeah. And seems pretty doable.
It's not that expensive to do. So again, it's not often that you find the United States in complete isolation when it comes to social services.
Yeah.
But this is one area where the United States is. North Korea has a more advanced maternity leave program than the United States. That's where we stand.
It's embarrassing.
So, again, I love that they're one of the countries that, that has it.
Yeah.
It's I don't know what exactly you do, but, well, I guess on maternity leave, you're not doing much anyway.
You don't
so.
Log into the internet.
No. Let's take a quick break. We'll have the answer to our trivia question after this.
The Financial Exchange is live on Facebook, so make sure to like our page and watch the guys break down the latest on the markets every day beginning at 10 on the Financial Exchange Radio Network. Financial news, business news, entertainment. If you don't think they all go together, you need to listen to our brand new podcast called Dumb Questions for Smart Money, presented by the Financial Exchange Radio Network. Subscribe today on Apple, Spotify, and all your favorite podcast apps.
Last segment, we asked a trivia question based on the Red Sox great Pedro Martinez. The most dominant pitching performance I ever saw was on September 10th, 1999, where he pitched a one-hitter in Yankee Stadium. The question was, who was the person who had the one hit, which was a home run, in the second inning? The correct answer was Chili Davis on the New York Yankees. Martinez only allowed four balls out of the infield the entire game, by the way.
That's remarkable.
And did not allow a single ball out of the infield in the last three innings.
Tom from Wakefield knew the correct answer, and he's our winner today. Congratulations, Tom. You're taking home a $50 gas card. You're also registered to win the pair of round-trip tickets to Nantucket on Southern Airways Express. We're giving those away this Friday, so tune in. Trivia is brought to you by Southern Airways Express. You can enjoy fall on Nantucket with Southern Airways Express. Book your flight today for a day trip or a long weekend with easy travel from Norwood, Providence, or New Bedford. You can forget the ferry or Logan's hassles and high fares. The easiest way to Nantucket is on Southern Airways Express. Great service, low fares. Book today at iFlySouthern.com.
Martinez, just to, again, I hate to go into this, but it's just, it was too good. Struck out eight of the nine last batters that he faced in that game. And in a game in which he faced 28 batters, threw only 40 balls the entire game.
How many pitches did he throw? Do we know?
120.
Wow.
120 pitches, 80 for strikes.
Pretty good.
He had 19 swinging strikes in the game.
That filthy changeup.
Oh, just ridiculous. Everything was working that night. It was just fantastic. Let's talk a little bit about all of the strikes that we seem to be seeing. We've had a few of them, pretty notable in the last couple of weeks. The John Deere one, the studio production one as well. We've got, you know, pilots that are talking about going on strike. You've got other unions at, which was the, there was some kind of food factory that saw a strike recently.
Kellogg's?
Kellogg's, that was it. Yep.
There are two different food factories that were striking those. Kellogg's and another one, too. I don't remember which.
And it's not really surprising that you're seeing it for two reasons. Number one, you always see strikes when the getting is good. You don't see it during times when unions are nervous. And number two, you've got some inflation going on. And so unions are trying to bargain pretty hard for their members for the next few years. And they've got an awful lot of leverage now as well. So I think that given the labor shortage, you're going to continue to see these. And so I think that this is going to be a period for at least a year or two of union disruptions via strikes.
I mean, what did we have in the month of August? I think it was a adjusted rate of 4.3 million quits.
Yes.
So, I mean, look, there's two ways that you negotiate higher pay. If you're non-union, you quit and you find something else. If you're union, you generally, I mean, my read onto this is, look, I've got a lot of built up benefits over the years. I don't want to give those up. Your option to negotiate wages there is less about quitting and more about striking. And so I think we're seeing both of these things at the same time, and neither of them surprise me a whole lot.
Now, there are some of these that I do find a little bit comical. Okay.
Sure.
There's a union representing 4,500 Harvard University graduate students that is set to walk if an agreement isn't reached by the end of the month. Presumably, I'm assuming that they want different rates for acting as TAs in undergrad courses and things along those lines, which is all well and good. But you're getting a degree from freaking Harvard. It's more valuable than anything you're going to be able to negotiate as a benefit there. That degree is probably worth, over the course of your life, anywhere from $3 to $5 million.
Yeah, I'm not, probably.
You know, I'm not saying that, hey, you shouldn't be paid a fair rate for teaching these courses. But the value of what you are getting is not in the rate you're paid for TAing these courses. It's in that piece of paper that says you went to Harvard and the networking that goes along with it.
Yeah, I'm with you there, but I'm almost never going to fall on the side of Harvard when it comes to a pay negotiation.
Well, and this is the other thing. Harvard's got an endowment of billions yeah. upon billions of dollars, so just pay the people.
Yeah.
It's
like, you know, I sit here and I don't know what exactly they're being asked to do and what they're being paid for it. But were I to read the details, my bet is that I would fall on the side of the graduate students at Harvard over the Harvard University.
I just enjoy a chance to, you know, give both of them a little bit of a twist.
Yeah,
in life.
I know you do.
You know,
know
you so do. So there's that. But
I mean, looking at these numbers here, we are looking at, what is it? I think 26 total strikes going across the United States that began in the month of October. It has been over 20 pretty consistently since April of this year compared to a January level of 7 strikes. And so I think you've seen this building, and I would anticipate that it is just going to become more and more prevalent here. I don't see this dying off anytime soon.
In 2019, there were 27 strikes, the highest number in nearly two decades. This year, there have been 14 work stoppages involving at least 1,000 workers this year so far. So I think we're starting to see the pace picking up just because obviously in the first part of the year, you didn't see many. It feels like 2022 is going to be the year of the strike.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it will continue through 2022. And I mean, with these quit rates, like we talked about, there's not much room for the employer to negotiate, I guess, would be my point.
No, what are you going to do? You're not going to find scab workers. It's no. Just, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You know?
It's not. Yeah, you're right. It's not like you can go find scabs right now. Salute to our soldiers on the Financial Exchange is brought to you by the Disabled American Veterans Department of Massachusetts. You can register today for this year's DAV 5K road race taking place on Saturday, November 6th at Fort Independence. Visit DAV5K.Boston for more information. Today, we'd like to honor Mr. Coleman Nee. Mr. Nee is the Chief Executive Officer of Triangle Incorporated, a human services agency in Malden, Massachusetts that supports individuals with disabilities through workforce training and residential care. He served as a United States Marine and is a veteran of the Persian Gulf War. He's a life member and the current National 3rd Junior Vice Commander of the Disabled American Veterans. If you'd like to help the Disabled American Veterans Department of Massachusetts and register for this year's DAV 5K, please visit DAV5K.Boston. Let's all finish at the Fort on Saturday, November 6th and support these great American heroes.
Massachusetts legislature voting to relax a decades-old rule to allow public retirees to work more while still collecting their pensions, basically bumping up the number of hours that a retired state or city worker can effectively work from 960 hours a year to 1,200.
It's the same story here.
Yes.
You can't find people.
No.
So
which
you
is
have
why they're
to
doing
negotiate.
This.
Yeah. There's no surprise.
I'm not
here
thrilled
again.
With it, but it's the corner
yeah,
that
I mean,
they're backed into.
So it's, you know, you've got, this applies to, you know, thousands of different workers, but you could have, for instance, a retired police officer working a traffic detail. They were previously limited to, what was it, like 15 hours a week. Now yeah. It can be up to 23 hours a week. They're also collecting their pension at the same time. I get why this rule has existed. But what else are you going to do? You're not going to find the qualified people that you need right now. You have the people. They just happen to be getting compensated more than you're usually comfortable with.
Yeah.
You deal with the consequences.
It's not an ideal situation, but you need the workers.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't really like it, but otherwise the jobs aren't getting done.
Right. There's plenty of fixes that should be out there, that could be out there. But in the short term, I don't see what choice you have here.
Another story about the labor market, this one from the Wall Street Journal, and that you've got finance chiefs around the country boosting up salaries and recruitment spending and trying to offer more in the way of perks and offering more equity in companies as they try to compete for workers. This is what everyone is doing right now.
Have you ever used the word plump as a verb?
Yeah, I tend to plump up around the holidays.
Yeah. Okay.
I tend to plump up around the holidays.
The Wall Street Journal here, the CFO's plump salaries. And I looked at that and I said, That is not a phrase that I have ever used before.
And it looked like a noun, but it was a verb there.
Yeah, it looked like they were describing CFOs' salaries, but in fact, they were talking about CFOs bumping up salaries. Yeah, look, I'm seeing this across the board, whether it be just pay alone or whether it be paid leave benefits, work from home benefits. To me, if you're a CFO looking at any of these, the very first one that I would be looking at is, does this person need to work in this office or can they be fully remote? That's the first thing that I would consider because it does nothing to your bottom line.
Nope.
In fact, it might benefit your bottom line. And if you start there, then you've just opened yourself up to the entire nation, perhaps the entire world of qualified employees.
Just some things that you're seeing right now, just as an example. Big Lots in September, the company upped its hourly rate for workers by $3 to $18.50 an hour at its Tremont, Pennsylvania distribution center because of other competition from other warehousing in the
Amazon.
Area. Read Amazon. You've got, what else here? MillerKnoll, which is based out of Michigan. They make office chairs and other furnishings. They've bumped up wages by 3% to 4% this year already. You've got, you know, all kinds of things that are being done here in order to try to keep people around. Cisco, the big restaurant, hotel, and hospital supplier of, you know, just about anything related to, well, really anything. They already spent $36 million on recruiting, training, and retention just in the quarter that just ended. They are giving out bonuses. They're launching a new driver training program in order to help people get their CDLs. They've got all kinds of things that are going on right now, and these are the things companies have to be doing.
Yeah, and Cisco is one of those prime companies that I've talked about before where you had, so I know this specifically because I have a client that was in this position where she had been a school lunch worker for years, employed by the town. They, during the Great Recession, had budget constraints, fired all those people. Cisco then supplied all the food to those places and hired those same people without benefits, without pensions, at a much lower rate. And 15 years later, you know, really, I guess, you know, where are we? I guess 12 to 13 years later, they're finally dealing with those wage pressures and trying to find solutions to it.
Let's skip this next story and go to just a little bit more talk about Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey talking about how hyperinflation will happen in the U.S. soon and so the world. So, as I said in hour one, I really like Jack Dorsey. I think he seems like a down-to-earth guy who actually, you know, kind of gets outside of his normal headspace a little bit and doesn't just, you know, manage the way most CEOs do. So I like Jack Dorsey. I think he is completely off his rocker when it comes to his talk about hyperinflation. Hyperinflation is not what we are seeing right now. What we're seeing right now is a period of elevated inflation where consumers see the prices of things going up. And as a result, they're looking for new jobs that pay more and they're looking for to find ways to, you know, cut spending and yada yada. Hyperinflation is something that happens when you see people in a country completely lose confidence in their currency to the point where they don't spend it, but they burn it or truck it around in wheelbarrows or use it as fertilizer because it doesn't have any other use because it's being devalued so quickly. Jack Dorsey also does happen to have a fairly large vested interest in cryptocurrency because of what is going on the Square platform with the Cash App and yada yada. Sure. And there's a whole bunch of crypto that's involved with Square right now.
Safe to say that
it feels like there's a little bit of a conflict of interest in the view that he expressed. Okay. And again, I think Jack's a smart guy, but I think he misspoke pretty badly, and he's kind of doubled down on it over the last day or two as well. And I just think that he is horribly off the mark here, and that I think all of us can admit that there is some real inflation happening at a much higher rate than in the past couple decades.
Yeah, and I think it get worse before it gets better. Like, could it see, you know, 150% of where we are today? Yeah, we could see 7 or 8% inflation in the short term.
But hyperinflation?
Hyperinflation is a completely different economic problem. It is not what we are experiencing today.
No. So I just think that it's important to note that, hey, we can have real conversations about how inflation's high without talking about stagflation or hyperinflation, both of which are not happening in the U.S. right now, and both of which are really, really bad things. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Stack Roulette.
Business and financial news affecting the markets and your wallet. We got it all straight from Wall Street, right here on the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
Fall is fantastic on Nantucket. The crowds are smaller, the weather is mild, and Southern Airways Express can get you there from Norwood, Providence, and New Bedford. Southern Airways flies from convenient, smaller, less congested airports, making it easy for you to pick the day and time you want to travel. So take off for a day trip, an overnight, or a long weekend, and enjoy fall on Nantucket. Fly from convenient locations in Norwood, Providence, and New Bedford, and avoid Logan's long lines and high costs. Southern Airways Express. Fast flights, low fares. Book today at iFlySouthern.com.
If you're nearing retirement age, it's incredibly important to know how required minimum distributions work. The penalties associated with withdrawing the wrong amount are hefty. Call the Armstrong Advisory Group and ask for their new free guide, Understanding RMDs. Call 800-393-4001 and get your copy today. That's 800-393-4001. Or download it right now at armstrongadvisory.com. Securities offered through Securities America Incorporated. Member FINRA SIPC and advisory services offered through Securities America Advisors Incorporated. Michael Armstrong, representative. Armstrong Advisory Group and the Securities America companies are unaffiliated. Representatives of Security America do not offer tax or legal advice. We're finally back together, and now it's time to finish in the fort. The DAV 5K is Saturday, November 6th, and there are still bibs available. To register for this year's DAV 5K and support the Disabled American Veterans of Massachusetts, visit DAV5K.Boston. That's DAV5K.Boston. The DAV 5K is proudly presented by Encore Boston Harbor.
Time for a little bit of stack roulette. I'll kick things off just briefly. PayPal says they're not pursuing an acquisition of Pinterest at the moment. This after PayPal stock got whacked last week following news that they were trying to buy, again, Pinterest, which is basically a marketplace, which is what they had before they spun off eBay. So it's like, what are you doing here? It does, unfortunately, potentially deprive us of the combined company being known as PayInterest, but... Such is life.
That would be good. Pinterest stock, by the way, down about 12.5% on this news today that they are not being acquired. Last week, Chuck, you weren't on the show when they did it, but Evergrande made their interest. Evergrande made their payment to foreign debt holders of the bond that they were in kind of a near default period. They made it on the second to last day that they were eligible to do so, therefore avoiding default. They have another one due next week, but news now that Evergrande has started some work on residential projects again, to me indicating that there has been some sort of turn in government policy towards the real estate sector in China.
The Chinese Communist Party is trying to engineer a soft landing for the real estate sector. Whether they're able to do so, I don't think any of us really know, but at least the imminent issues seem to be pushed off at this point. And I think it's not an all clear signal because there still are issues with the Chinese real estate sector, but it is a sign that the Chinese government is just not going to let the thing blow up and let everything fall apart there.
Yeah, that seems to be the indication for me, is that I don't know where, when, or how the Communist Party got involved here, if they started just telling banks again to lend, or what exactly happened. We don't know. We might not know. But following the Evergrande situation, followed by another company that entered the pre-default stage, another Chinese real estate developer that entered that stage, it looks like, as suspected, the Chinese Communist Party doing what's in the best interest of the Chinese Communist Party.
Beyond Meat, pretty close to a 52-week low as they continue to see some struggles to keep their sales moving in the direction they want to. The stock reached a 52-week high of $221 a share earlier this year, now down to around $93 a share, so just a monster loss. And, you know, they cited, okay, we've got the Delta variant and severe weather. I've said for a while that I didn't know what made this company special in that category. It's not like they do anything that is groundbreaking from a technological perspective, and they were getting valued as a tech company. Maybe things coming back down to earth a little bit here, but this is one that I think that the hype was just so big with it, and I never really saw it as anything more than a fad. So I look at this and I say, yeah, they're going to make sales, but they're not going to be worth, you know, $30, $40 billion. There's no reason for them to be.
At the end of the day, they're just a food company.
They're a food company. And they are not a technology company.
The same can be said for all these oat milk companies that I know are very fashionable right now. But at the end of the day, if your sales even just replace a large chunk of traditional milk sales, you're a milk company. You're not
wonderful.
Valued. Like, that's fascinating. It's cool technology. I like the product. you're not some revolutionary tech company that's going to be valued like Tesla. So I think investors just have to get comfortable with that idea.
Markets continuing to make what is now going from a little rally to, I would say, a moderately sized rally. The Dow's up 63 points, S&P up 16, NASDAQ up 84, Russell up almost 1%. So we've got some more green on the board as October has been very kind to investors after just a not very fun September. October's been much more enjoyable. We hope you had an enjoyable day today. We're done for the day. Back at it tomorrow. So join us tomorrow on the Financial Exchange.